I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. ''90 was a big year for music. Sure, it was a new decade, but it also launched the careers of three major country stars, talking about Garth Brooks, Alan Jackson, and Clint Black. We'll talk with Seminole State College musicologist Dr. Joe Girano about why he says Garth Brooks stood out from the others. Plus, we'll head south to Miami to learn about a Haitian violinist who's overcoming scars, both mental and physical, left by the earthquake last year. Those conversations and stories ahead on Intersection. Remember what you were doing back in 1990? Well, think back to what you were listening to on the radio. And what did it sound like? Was it anything like this? You call them cool. That's country music star Garth Brooks. And Seminole State College musicologist Dr. Joe Gennaro says 1990 was a breakout year for country music. That's when Garth Brooks, Alan Jackson, and Clint Black all became huge stars. We'll talk with Joe Gennaro about why he thinks Garth Brooks was the leader of that pack and what his place in country music has become today. That's ahead. It always comes with Dr. Joe Gennaro is a musicologist at Seminole State College and also teaches at the University of Central Florida. Joe, welcome to Intersection.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
It's great to have you in. So, why did 1990 turn out to be this seminal year for country music?
Well, as you had mentioned before, it was the debut in large part, of Garth Brooks, Travis Tritt, Clint Black, and Alan Jackson, all who stars who still have albums that are selling today. And as you said before, it was my belief that Garth, of course, comes out to the fore in that bunch. You're looking at an artist who, since 1990, has not been outsold by anyone, and that includes the Beatles. And all time, in terms of record sales in this country, there are only two artists or a group in the Beatles and artist in Elvis Presley who have outsold Garth Brooks. That's quite an amazing statistic, since his career has only spanned now 20 years. And also, even more impressive, because he retired in 2001. So,
and he's still a presence out there.
He's still a presence. Most recently, I believe that he signed to do some acts in Vegas. But has remained relatively quiet for almost a decade now. But nonetheless, you've out of that group, you've got Alan Jackson, who is still performing very, very strong and scoring hits. But getting back to Garth, this was the first multi-platinum selling artist in the history of country music. And all of those statistics that I've told you, he's done faster than anybody. I mean, you look at some artists who have been presence, who've had a presence here in the United States: Michael Jackson, Madonna, Prince. He's outsold them all.
Well, what do you think has contributed to that meteoric rise to fame?
I think that it's a combination of several things with Garth. First and foremost, tunes of Garth stand, I believe, a little outside the cliche of what, let's say, a country song sounds like. He infused a lot of rock, honky tonk, and as I'll explain in my paper this next week, put a great deal of a social conscience into his songs that had not been really noticed yet, or not much since, let's say, Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson had come along, and he was represented a younger generation, I believe. But most importantly, was his ability to cross over to fans that had never listened to country music before. I mean, people who were not necessarily of a blue-collar crowd, but of a white-collar crowd, and that's very significant at this point, and it had not happened before.
So give us some context for what was happening in popular music in 1990, both in country, I guess, leading up to 1990, and in other genres in popular music that contributed to giving Garth a moment to stand out?
Well, I think that if you look at the turn of the decade, so to speak, you're seeing The rise of hip hop and even rap out of the underground to a genre that really comes to the fore in this country. We're only a little bit removed from where we'll get with the Seattle invasion and alternative music that comes out during this time. I think that you'll see also a result of the individuals that I had mentioned to you with Garth and Alan Jackson and Clint Black and others who debuted in this year. You'll also see a group of country artists that will write music that's in an alternative vein, an alternative country vein that's outside, let's say, maybe some of the cliched aspects of Nashville. As a result.
Well, let's get into the music. And one of your main focuses on the impact of Garth Brooks is those songs. And here's one of them. This is Garth Brooks' song, The Dance. And we'll listen to a little bit of this.
For a moment, all the world was right. How could I have known that you'd ever say goodbye?
I think it's interesting, if you see the video for this, mm-hmm. when he's singing that, there's pictures of John F. Kennedy with his family, there's pictures of Martin Luther King with his mm-hmm. family. I mean, this is really touching stuff.
Mm-hmm. And what's most striking about this song, to me, as I experienced it during this time, was that it's very there's a haunting tone to it that you can hear outside the video. With strings in the background, this echo-like effect that is presented in his voice. Amazingly, sometime in the 1990s, I believe it was 1995, Country Music Weekly, the magazine, did a piece on the number. The top 100 selected jukebox songs of country music, and this was number one, if you can believe it. And this is not a song that, if you heard right off the bat, that you would say that's a country tune. Particularly with all of the different elements to it, with strings in the background, as I said before, the very ominous tone. It's outside the cliched wide open spaces or unrequited love of a lot of country music songs.
And is there a political message in it? And I wonder, looking in today's highly mm-hmm. polarized world, immediately you look at that video, and there's definitely some very strong, you know, liberal Democratic figures in that video.
Absolutely, and it's not something that you would expect from an individual who's a country music artist and B from Oklahoma. You know, it's just not something that you would expect right off the bat. Yeah.
Well, talk a little bit about Garth Brooks, the man. You know, mm-hmm. how did he start out in country music? You mentioned he comes from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. How did he rise into the big star that we know today, even though he's been off the scene for about a decade?
Well, it took him a while to get established. His first album that was a self-titled album in Garth Brooks was successful, amazingly, as a first album. I believe it topped out at number 12 on the charts for him. There's a famous story that he says that he was riding along in his truck, and the moment that he heard his first release of that album, Much Too Young to Feel This Damn Old, he had to pull over on the side of the road because he couldn't believe he was hearing himself on the radio. So I think that his career started off in a very, very humble way, and it was something that I think that he showed throughout the majority of his career as someone who came from rather humble beginnings. It's not that different from many other stars in Nashville who started off in this way, you know, the sort of a backwoods or you know, lower income upbringing to rise to the top of Nashville. You can see the same thing in Johnny Cash, even Alan Jackson. So it's not all that different from what we've seen. Rags to riches, I guess, is the best way to say it.
And speaking of Alan Jackson, we'll be listening to that as a bit of a contrast here in just a second. We're talking with Seminole State College musicologist Joe Gennaro about why he says 1990 stands out as a bumper year for country music and musician Garth Brooks. What were you listening to in 1990? Was it Garth Brooks, as his music made you like or maybe dislike country music? Well, you can tell us about it on the WMFE Facebook and Twitter pages. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM Orlando. I'm Mark Simpson. So I want to get into that, comparing a little bit Alan Jackson, Garth Brooks. You mentioned also Clint Black in there, but here's a snapshot of Alan Jackson performing his song, Chasing That Neon Rainbow. This also from that year, 1990. Alan Jackson here. Now this sounds country.
Absolutely. You can listen to Alan perform today, and I've seen him a number of times in my young life. His sound has not changed tremendously from this point. This is, I think, something that has differed in both of their careers with Garth, who's been much more experimental, and in Alan Jackson, who stuck more to some of the traditional roots along his career. Here is your very typical Nashville star, all the acoustic elements, some electric elements, some slide guitar, but it tells a story. Most importantly, it tells a story of that's almost autobiographical for him, that shows his rise through the scene. And I think it's something that we can see in Alan Jackson, at least in his career, is something that at least I've always thought it doesn't not necessarily in sound that we can compare it, but in terms of the honesty and the way that the affect of his music is, it's very comparable to what we saw in Hank Williams Sr. Songs that are autobiographical and very believable, very direct and very honest to his audience.
And you get that honky-tonk sound, that honky-tonk kind of guitar.
Absolutely.
Which, when you say honky-tonk, I mean, you got to talk about Hank Williams.
Oh, absolutely.
Honky-tonkin'.
Right? Absolutely, yes. Yes.
Well, you know, one thing I want to ask you about is in country, you know, the voice, there is such an emphasis in this music on the tenor and the quality of someone's voice. And one voice that I've always loved is Vince Gill. And so just for more comparison here, let's listen just a sample of Vince Gill, and we can talk about Garth Brooks and Vince Gill and
sure,
Alan Jackson.
Absolutely.
This is Vince Gill, I Still Believe in You.
Wow.
You know, just a velvet voice you could wrap yourself up in. But talk to me about that. You know, Vince Gill, is he just a crooner, or is he a honky-tonking kind of country guy, too, or where does he stack up?
Well, this song in particular is obviously a love ballad, and it's amazing that when you look at the decade of the 1990s and a song like this that comes out, comparing it to the decades past, this is something that you might expect on a soft rock station. And even to a contemporary adult or adult contemporary crowd.
So is it sensitive country?
I think it is. I really do. It is still something though that does present that element of honesty of perhaps unrequited love, the love that's never met or that is unequaled on the other side.
Is this something those other musicians, Alan Jackson and Garth Brooks, would stay away from?
No, because there are certainly numbers in Alan's career. I'll Go On Loving You is one that stands out in my mind that is highly, highly sensitive. And perhaps something that might parallel it to a matter of degree is what Garth did in terms of some of the social issues that he looked at, particularly in We Shall Be Free, a controversial song from on his behalf, particularly in the line when we're free to love anyone we choose, a verse that many country fans feared was advocating gay rights. The song as a whole is a reaction to the 1992 riots in L.A. and Rodney King. And this line is furthered even more by the fact that here Garth Brooks appears on Barbara Walters and says, I have a sister who's a lesbian.
Well, let's listen to that
absolutely.
Line. This is a live performance of Garth Brooks doing We Shall Be Free. Let's hear it. So a little hard to make out there, but tell us again that line.
When we're free to love anyone we choose, that line right there was front and center of a great debate. Is Garth advocating gay rights? To a matter of degree, as I was saying before, this song takes a great chance lyrically and then also musically. I mean, this is a big time gospel infused selection. Just like Vince Gill's number is infused with a keyboard tones rather than, let's say, acoustic instruments. And a song, as I said before, that falls squarely in an adult contemporary category, perhaps.
Why that shift in country music with those adult contemporary elements coming into it? What changed?
Well, I'm not so sure I could answer that positively. I think we might be able to say that it's a spirit of the times. I mean, you look at the way that the 1990s unfolded, and even the first part of this century has unfolded. Artists in all genres have taken, I think, greater chances, not only in their music, but in social avenues, being more socially conscious about their surroundings. And this doesn't speak for every single artist out there. I mean, I think there's a select number of musicians who have gone in that vein. But even in musically speaking, I think that you've seen a lot of hybridity in music. It's very difficult, I think, to put your thumb on and say, well, we can box this up and say that's definitely rock. We can box this up and say this is definitely country. We can box this up and say it's definitely hip hop or rap. I mean, that you run into some very slippery slopes, regardless of the genre. And I think it really is a spirit of the times to say that the influences have really bled over from one to the next.
We're talking with Seminole State College musicologist Joe Gennaro about 1990 country music, talking about Garth Brooks, Vince Gill, we're talking Alan Jackson, all these different artists. And come back with me, Joe, just to talk about that quality of the voice in country music. What do you hear in the difference between someone like Garth Brooks, Alan Jackson, and Vince Gill? We heard that snippet of Vince Gill, and you can hear he's got a much higher ranged voice.
Much higher range voice.
And so many of the great singers do have that, but what about the prominence and the quality of a voice? It's almost like a wind instrument that is what your calling card is.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, that's first and foremost what an artist has to have, something that is identifiable. You think back to the history of country music and the artists that have set the tone for the for artists even nowadays. Hank Williams, from the moment he opened his mouth, you knew who was singing, the inflections in his voice that he used.
A real twang.
Absolutely, a real twang, a nasal quality even in his voice. You can even go back as far as Jimmy Rogers, who yodeled in his songs in the 1930s. Johnny Cash, perhaps one of the most identifiable voices, no matter the genre. I think the second that Johnny Cash uttered a musical tone, you knew who it was.
Just spoke.
Absolutely, you knew who it was. Willie Nelson, you can really say the same thing about this speaks to your point about a higher quality of voice. There has to be something, I think, that stands out for the artist. With Garth, I think that there's the overall power of his voice. With Alan, there's the twang that gives a very strong sense of honesty. And with Vince, it's that smooth crooning style that does stand out very differently from the other artists. And you can see this today with I really see how Keith Urban kind of fits that similar mold. Even Rascal Flatts that we see with Vince Gill. And ultimately, what I think it speaks to is that fans like variety. If all you hear is the same thing every day, and I think this is what the 1990s brought about. And it's not only on the men's side. We're not that distance from Shania Twain and Faith Hill and Martina McBride making a huge, huge statement. Who would have thought in the year 1990 that the voice of Sunday Night Football would be Faith Hill? When for years in the 1990s and perhaps even preceding that, it was Hank Williams Jr. Are you ready for some football? I mean, a male-dominated viewership. And Faith Hill is now the voice of that. I mean, and you can see this is sort of the epitome of it. And it really starts during this decade when you get such a variety of artists and what they were able to do.
Joe Gennaro, how does Garth Brooks, Alan Jackson, Vince Gill, how do these singers buck the trend of that kind of Nashville country machine?
Well,
or do they? Can they?
I think that part of them... as individuals, probably things that they do buck the tide of Nashville as an institution, even though they are sort of the poster children of Nashville. Nashville is an institution, I think, and always will be. It's unique from other genres of music because if you think of rock, what do we have an institution in rock? Perhaps music festivals. We had Woodstock, and we've had other festivals that have certainly been institutions in that vein. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, perhaps, is an institution. But in terms of a performing center and a recording center, Nashville's very unique as an American institution, at least in my opinion, and how it has always been this way. I mean, from the point of it being a radio show to a country tin pan alley, so to speak.
Joe, bring us up to the present time. Where is country music today? Is it bigger than ever? Is this thing going to decline at all? What's going on?
Well, if you look at the career of one artist and one artist alone right now, you can see how much it is growing, and that is Taylor Swift. You cannot deny what this young lady has done in crossing over to audiences on the pop side of the charts. This is not something that is real common in country music, and it's not something that's entirely common now. I mean, you've got your R&B artists who tend to stay on those charts. You've got pop artists who tend to stay on those charts, and country music artists that tend to stay on those charts. And you see what Taylor Swift has done in getting number one songs on the pop charts time and time again. But she's a country star, and you can see how all this plays out. The artists are getting much, much younger in Nashville.
Well, Joe, lots of people interested in country music out there in our listening audience. You're going to be talking about this coming up this week. What should people know?
I'll be giving a paper/lecture at Seminole State College on the Sanford and Lake Mary campus on Garth Brooks and his impact on country music and the alternative elements in his music. It'll be from 12:15 to 1 p.m. in the Fine Arts Auditorium on the Sanford Lake Mary campus, and that is room G118.
And if anyone needs more information, we'll have a link to that on our webpage. Dr. Joe Gennaro is a musicologist at Seminole State College, also teaches at the University of Central Florida. Joe, thanks so much for stopping by.
Anytime. Thank you very much.
And we're going to go out here. We're going to hear a little more Garth Brooks. This is Standing Outside the Fire. Coming up on Intersection, we'll learn about a violinist who's recovering from injuries to his hand in the deadly earthquake in Haiti a year ago and find out why he's still playing. That story, next. So many lives were changed by Haiti's earthquake last year, and Romel Joseph is one of them. Joseph is a blind, Juilliard-trained violinist. His left hand was crushed in the rubble during the quake, and thanks to the care he received from doctors at Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami, he can still play the violin. HealthyState.org's Sammy Mack reports Joseph has come a long way in a year.
About 3 months after the earthquake in Haiti, Romel Joseph was healed enough to pick up a violin again. But it was painful. He could only play a few minutes at a time in his Jackson Hospital bed. This week, at that very same hospital, Joseph performed for an audience of nurses, doctors, and hospital staff during an earthquake memorial service. His daughter, Victoria, accompanied him.
I think that's a big difference from last year to this year, in that I got to perform for the Jackson staff. And that's wonderful, as opposed to being on a stretcher.
By the way, this violin was buried next to my wife. Unfortunately, my wife didn't survive, but the violin did.
Joseph chose to play Handel's Passacaglia for violin and viola.
Where the beginning was more somber and more sad and more, not morbid, but lugubrious, I think the word is. You know, it ends in a brilliant major, G major chord, which symbolizes life to me.
For Florida Public Radio and HealthyState.org, I'm Sammy Mack in Miami.
Share your thoughts about today's show on the Florida Talks blog. You can visit our webpage, wmfe.org/intersection. There you'll be able to hear this program again and find out how to get our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners and from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.